desire and interest in your prayers this morning, and would like to continue down a path. I feel like after last Sunday evening, feel like the Lord's been talking to my heart a little more about the subject that we had. So I'm going to write that on the board again. I'd like to talk to us today, with the help of the Lord, about being aware. And I'm going to be kind of close to us all. So I'd like for us to open our hearts to hear what the Lord would have to say, not because I'm talking, but because I feel like the Lord would like to speak to us, and He'd like for us to have a good understanding. I believe God intends for us to be victorious. I believe that God's intent is that our spiritual man would be more capable and progress instead of regress. We buy almost everything we buy as far as consumer goods goes down in value as soon as we take the wrapper off. You can buy yourself a tool, take it home and cut those little security bands and open the box up and say, that's not really what I want, and try to get your money out of that. Don't work very good. You buy yourself a car and drive it home and decide next week you really don't like it. It doesn't matter if you bought a new one or a used one. Odds are you're going to take less for it than you paid for it. It's just the way it seems like everything around us deteriorates. But I believe that our spiritual man is something different than that. I believe that we can accumulate. I believe that we can prosper. I believe we can become more connected with God and have a more rewarding life spiritually as time goes on, rather than seeing things leak out and ebb away. That's the way physical things seem to do. They seem to deteriorate, but I believe our spiritual man can grow and prosper. Doesn't matter what our age is. So I'd like to read a couple little definitions. One is on the word aware. It means watchful, vigilant, guarded, but more strictly in modern uses, apprised, or that means informed. Expecting an event from information or probability. So that's what aware, that's a dictionary definition. Aware means to, there's a level of understanding that we have, and we, you might say, can predict future developments because of what we observe, and we're very perceptive. You know, if you have a piece of machinery and you hear a ka-thumpa-thumpa, you can pretty well rest assured that something is going, if that noise quits, something's going to be broke. It's probably not going to heal itself. You can pretty well predict a breakdown is coming. I'm sure Brother Rob can tell us that he's been driving down the road and he hears a little noise and it's like, then all of a sudden, we got a tire blowed out or lost a tread or something. It's there's things that happen like that, and it's because we're aware. The people that come along to my place of business and in my occupation and say, I don't know what was happening. We're just driving down the road and it quit running. I'm going to tell you, they're not very aware. Some of them, I think, they had the music up too loud, or they just weren't paying attention. They weren't aware. So for us to be aware, it means that we're being perceptive of our surroundings. And the word perception means the act of perceiving or receiving impression by the senses. In that act or process of the mind which makes known an external object. In other words, the notice which the mind takes of external objects. So perception is being able to discern maybe whether something is hot or not. Now, if you go to the Mexican restaurant and they don't have to say hot plate when they bring your plate. If they bring your plate out and there's steam coming up off of those fajitas you ordered, guess what? You know that's hot. It's perception, not because you felt it, but because you saw something that helped you bring that conclusion. Now, we can all have probably seen some things that was something like fake smoke. You know, it's just kind of like a fog or steam, you know, maybe from a smoke machine. Well, there's really no fire in a smoke machine to a great extent. Okay, so there are some things that you might misperceive something, but if somebody hands you or sets something in front of you, some food, and there's like steam coming up off of it, I think all of us are perceptive enough, we're aware enough that that's hot. Okay? We don't want to just scoop it up and put it in our mouth till it cools just a little bit. All right? So last Sunday evening, we spoke primarily about being able to be aware and perceive things around our surroundings. And we talked about Gideon quite a bit of how he was perceptive of the forces of the enemy, and he had needed a lot of reassurance, but he was able to go forward when God helped him to understand the fears of the other people too. And it is very essential that we are aware of what our surroundings are and how they can impact us and how they can cause us to have to adapt and adjust. We walk into a room and many of us can perceive when there's tension in the room between other people. May not be directed towards us, but there's something going on. We don't know what it is, but there's some kind of tension. That's perception, and that's being aware of that. But I would like to bring this right into our own lives, and I'd like for us to consider, with the help of the Lord, how aware we are about our own selves. So I'd like to ask you, how aware are we of the precedents we are setting with our own lives? You know, we set one. All of us are setting a precedent. And others looking on are affected. What do you do about some kind of personal attribute that we know is unappealing? What do we try to do about that? We make an effort to minimize it, don't we? If there's something about my appearance that I know is not very appealing, or I feel that it's unappealing, then I will try to, I will make an adjustment for that. And I believe there's limitations. I'm not in for plastic surgery, and I'm not in for coloring my hair. You can tell by looking at me. I'm not into doing things that is artificial. But I am in for tucking my shirt tail in. I am in for combing my hair. I am in for washing my face and my hands. I think there's something that I need to be able... You know that some people aren't aware that there's a smell that goes with them. But we ought to be cognizant of that. We ought to try to do the things that would make people want to be around us. Not because we're rich and famous or something like that, but we want people to not be rejected. We want to be aware. Sometimes this happens in our line of work. One of the fellows would be working and something gets on them. We used this illustration last Sunday night a little bit, but something gets on their face and they don't know it. Or maybe they had something on their hand and they reached up and scratched their eyebrow and now they've got a big black smudge on their forehead. And we can go the rest of the day if we don't look in the mirror and not know that that's there. But if we know it's there, well, guess what we're going to do? We're going to do our best to take it off. We're going to scrub it. We're going to wipe it. We're going to remove that. So how many of us believe that there are some things that we're not aware of? I believe it. I believe there's things that are apparent to others and are unaware to me. There's probably things about my personality. There may be things about my appearance. There may be things, when I see a picture of me, it looks a little different than what I think it looks ought to look like. And it's just because I don't look at pictures of me a lot. And when I look at a picture, it's like, is that really what I look like? Is that really my posture? Is that really my facial expressions? You know, and others may be very aware and I'm not so aware. So I believe that there are things that I'm oblivious to. I don't know. And other people's like, oh yeah, that's Brother Dan. He looks like this, or he acts like that, or he sounds like this, or I'm sure there's some young person somewhere, and maybe some not so young, that gave some rendition of me speaking. And it's probably been humorous. There are things about how I express myself and what I say that I'm not as keenly aware maybe as I should be. So I want us to think this morning, I want us to really consider, do I seek to be aware, and am I paying attention to the precedents that I'm setting? Because I am. I know I am. I know that because of who I am and what I've been, that my children have picked some of those things up. Maybe a lot of those things. And so when they went out and sought a companion, now they have a companion that may be very aware and very perceptive. And my sons may not be so aware of their actions and their mannerisms. And it's because I set a precedence and I impacted them, not because I was trying to do it maliciously or anything like that. It's the way things work. It's the way things fall into place. So I'd like for us to look at some examples, a couple examples in the scripture of something that happened and it made a dramatic change in the future. Many times when we're impacted by others, we use it as an excuse or a reason for not having victory ourselves. We don't address it for what it is. When we do become aware, instead of addressing it and resolving it, we just kind of go on. This is why and where and when and how, and everybody else just has to adapt. Well, I want us to seriously think, is that healthy? Is that healthy for me? If I say, y'all just going to have to get used to it. Is that healthy for me? And is it healthy for those that I'm impacting? Do we know how far-reaching it's going to be? Sometimes I believe that we make concessions ourselves and we don't realize how far-reaching that concession is. I'd like to look at a man that we all know, and there's a lot of things I admire about this person. Even mentioned his name this morning. I'd like to turn to 1 Chronicles, the 3rd chapter. I would like to look at something about the man we know as King David. You know, David, one of the earliest things, stories we know about him was him being the courageous young lad that said, and it's recorded in the scripture, about this giant that came and was contesting the armies of the Israelites. He said, "Is there not a cause?" And it's a rallying phrase today. Is there not a cause? And David was looking at something that was bigger and more noble than himself. And I believe that David held that all the way down through his life. When Nathan the prophet came and told him, "You've sinned, you've done wrong," you know what caused David to say, "I'm the man. I'm guilty. I'm willing to take responsibility for my..." You know why he did that? It's because he had a keen vision that there was a cause. And that cause was bigger than David. And when David came down to the end of his life, you know what he wanted to accomplish? He wanted to build a temple. A permanent structure for the worship of his God. And all the way down through David's life, we see these evidences of David's integrity and his purpose and his, is there not a cause? I believe that followed him all the way down to the end of his time. Did he make some mistakes? He did. But I believe there was something that he was unaware of, and he set a course that was catastrophic. And I want us to look at that. Do you know that David had 8 wives that are named, their names are recorded in the scripture? I'd like to read beginning verse 1, chapter 3 of 1 Chronicles. It says, "Now these are the sons of David, which were born unto him in Hebron, the firstborn Ammon of Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, the second Daniel of Abigail, the Carmelitess, the third Absalom, the son of Machah, the daughter of Talmaiah, the king of Geshur, the fourth Adonijah, the son of Haggith, the fifth Sephatiah of Abital, the sixth Ithream by Eglah his wife. These 6 were born unto him in Hebron, and there he reigned 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem he reigned 33 years. And these were born unto him in Jerusalem, Shimeah and Shobad and Nathan and Solomon, 4 of Bathsheba, the daughter of Amiel. Ibhar also, and Elisha of and Nogah and Nepheg of Japhia. And Elishab, anyway, three more. That means nine altogether. These were all the sons of David, besides the sons of the concubines and Tamar, their sister. So, he had a lot of sons, but he had eight wives by the names. The names are listed here. Plus, there was concubines, and there was that basically meant a wife that their son didn't, their children had no hope of inheritance. I'm not real sure all those details, but that's an explanation that I can give this morning. He had another, his first wife. Do you remember her name? Michael. You know, marriage is serious. And today, the stand that we take is that one life, one wife. If your spouse passes away, then we feel that the scripture teaches us that we can marry again as long as they're in the same status. But that's not the point of my message this morning. The point of my message is that David set a precedence, and I don't think he was aware of the precedence that he set. You know, Michael, his first wife, she was the daughter of Saul. She was a trophy wife. You kill the giant, I give you my daughter in marriage. She was enraptured with David because he was a hero. Fairy tale type story, isn't it? I'll tell you, it's a bad precedence to get married on. If you're marrying a woman because you feel like she's a trophy, and you're marrying him because you feel like he's a national hero, that's not a good foundation to get married. There needs to be something else. But he went from that and picking up wives for he had a reason for every one of them. He had a reason for marrying Abigail. You remember her husband Naboth? He was a churlish man, is what the scripture says, and the Lord killed him. And he invited Abigail to be his wife. Sounds like an honorable thing, doesn't it? Other than he already had a wife. But he set a precedence, and I don't think he was aware of the precedence he set. Because we can look at others many times and see what they're doing wrong, but it's really hard to see ourselves. It's really hard to be aware of what I'm doing and how it can impact others. And I don't think David did that. I don't think he understood what he was setting up. You think Solomon grew to manhood without knowing the story behind his mother becoming David's wife? I don't think so. I think Solomon was aware. I think he was aware of how that came to be. Did you know that Bathsheba was the eighth wife of David? Did you know that, well, let's turn and read that. You think, well, David just had eight wives. He was king. He needed eight wives. I don't think so. If he needed eight, then God would have made eight Eves for Adam, and he didn't do that. He only made one. And if you turn to 1 Kings 11th chapter, we notice here how many wives that Solomon had. Remember, Solomon was the son of the eighth wife of David. 1 Kings 11, in verse 1, it says, "But King Solomon loved many strange women, together with the daughter of Pharaoh, women of Moabites, Ammonites, Edomites, Zidonians, and Hittites, of the nations concerning which the Lord said unto the children of Israel, ye shall not go into them, neither shall they come in unto you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clave unto these in love, and he had 700 wives, princesses, and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart." You know, if we miss the mark and we're not aware, we're missing it. It's going to set a precedence. If we're missing the mark and we realize it and we don't adjust it, it's going to have a catastrophic effect on the next generation. Eight wives, however many concubines David had, however many sons he had, next generation, Solomon come along. He was the son of the eighth wife. No big deal. Just marry all of them you come in contact with. Meet a new one and just marry her. 700 wives. Completely off the charts. David wasn't aware what he was setting his son Solomon up for. He wasn't aware of what he was doing. Are you aware of what you're doing? Are you aware of how that could affect the next generation? Oh, we can be aware and make some changes for good. But I want us to think, what are we doing today that would be a hurdle? You know how hard it would have been? I believe God had the power to help him. Don't get me wrong in what I'm saying this morning. I believe God could have helped Solomon to be a man after God's own heart. But that's not what happened. Solomon took the trajectory, the precedence that David, and he just took it and ran with it, so to speak. It became inconsequential. What do you feel like is questionable today that the next generation will think there's no consequence? You ever thought about that? What do you feel like don't matter, really, that the next generation will say, it don't matter? What is it about your integrity? What is it about your relationship with the Lord that maybe you feel like, well, I don't know, there's a good reason. There's a good reason I do this, and there's a good reason I do that, and whatever it is. But you know, Solomon did something else. Solomon, it said here, allowed these women to turn his heart away from God. And Solomon brought something in that David didn't bring in. David took a position against idolatrous worship, and he died with it ringing true. Is there not a cause? He did. Solomon started out a humble man before God. Do you remember that? Lord, I need wisdom. More than anything else, I need wisdom to be able to govern so great a people as this. And Solomon is accredited with a big portion of the book of Proverbs and Solomon and Ecclesiastes, a lot of wise things. And you know, they've done a lot of people a lot of good. I've got a lot of benefit out of the Proverbs. There's a lot of good things there that will keep us in the right direction in our life. But you know, all of God's wisdom that he blessed Solomon with done him very little good in his own life. And Solomon didn't live by them, and he didn't die by them. He died without them. It sure seems like that Solomon went down in history with another precedence, and that is idolatrous worship. You know what would have caused David to write almost, we would say, turn over in his grave, rise up in indignation, to realize that his son was worshiping idols with in Jerusalem. He had a temple to some of those idols pretty much next door to God's temple before he died. Do you know that would have caused David to say, "What are you doing?" David wasn't aware. And Solomon allowed his sense of awareness to degenerate to the point. You know, it's one thing to do something in the dark. It's another thing to do it in front of everybody. And Solomon was worshiping idols in front of everybody. Other people knew it. It wasn't, if you build a temple for something, other people know what you're doing. It's not a secret. And you know, the precedence he set for the nation of Israel was that it's okay to worship idols. And you know what caused them to be carried off into captivity? Idolatry. It was their choice. And there were some levels of victory down through time, but look at the tenor that he brought in by him not himself not being aware of what he was doing. Just as David was not aware of the precedents he was setting with how many wives he had. He didn't have near as many wives as Solomon did. Solomon seemed to not be aware of the precedents he was having, setting with idolatry. And he brought that in. So where does that bring us today? What do I do and allow in my wife, in my life that affects others? Are we aware of the direction we're projecting our lives? Do we set the curve or we follow the curve? And what curve are we setting? Or what curve are we following? Are we aware of how we use our time? Are we aware of the values that we have? Are we aware of our priorities? What's important to us? Are we aware of how well we follow through or don't follow through with something? Commitments that we make? Are we aware of our attention to details? Making sure that things are secured, things are completed. I want us to examine our hearts today. Are we aware? Or are we like the man over in James? We read this last Sunday. We'll read it again. James, the first chapter, verse 23 and verse 24. He says, "For if any be a hearer of the word and not a doer, he's likened to a man beholding his natural face in a glass. And he beholdeth himself and goeth his way and straightway forgetteth what manner of man he was." Are we aware? Sometimes we need to ask God to give us a mirror in his word. What's in my heart? What am I looking for a way to find a reason for, an excuse for? Is there anything? I'm not above what I'm saying. I'm in this too. Am I aware? What am I doing? What is the tenor that I set in my life? What is important to me? What is it that I put first? And what is it that I put last? And if I set a course, if I set a curve, and somebody else follows it, where will it take them? If I adjust my values to what's comfortable for me, where will the next generation be? Where will those end up that are looking on me and being impacted by me? My sphere of influence may not be so big, and maybe it may not be so long reaching, but it'll have an effect, good or bad. Every one of us is going to have an impact. I am so grateful. I want to say this in the middle of it. I'm so grateful for the gospel of opportunity to change courses. I believe in that with all of my heart. And whether it's a minor thing that we need to be aware of and we need to make, or if it's a big thing. The Apostle Paul was on the road to do persecution, and before he could get the job done, God turned him around 180 degrees. That's the beauty of the gospel message. The Apostle Paul that we know as Apostle Paul was going down to Damascus to wreak havoc amongst the Christians. And God got a hold of him, spun him around, and he come out of Damascus preaching the gospel. Now that's an about face, isn't it? And he can do that in our life. If you are become aware today that you're going on the wrong path, I'm fastly going down the wrong direction, the Lord can take and spin us around and point us in the correct direction. But what if we're just getting off on the edge? You know, my wife don't like for me to drive on those rumble strips. Now, some of my reason is the state of Missouri puts them too close to the lane I'm supposed to drive in. If I'm not mistaken, Oklahoma puts them over on the shoulder a little bit and gives me another 6 inches or eight or something like that. But Missouri puts them right on the white line. And if I get over there very close, she's poking me. And then if I get on the ones in the middle that goes bump, 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 she wants me to go the other way. You know, if we need to make a minor correction, then the Lord's got grace for us and He can help us. But when we look up and we know that we're supposed to be going west and we're going east, the Lord's got a, there's an exit ramp that we can get off on and whip this thing around and we can go the other way. That's the gospel. That's the dispensation we live in. We don't have to go down, just keep going down until the end. We can turn around. That's the hope in the gospel. But the thing I want us to get a hold of today is if we say, Lord, show me, help me to know. And then we go and say, the Lord showed me something, but He knows. He knows. Yeah, He does know. He really does know. And He showed it to us. And He helped us to be aware for a little piece of time. But what did we do with it? Well, I don't know. You know, I can put grease in my hair and make it all stand up and look in my mirror, and then I can go out, and if I don't do something about it, 3 hours later, I still look like that. And somebody else that meets me says, he's the dirtiest looking person I ever seen. He just got grease in his hair and all. You know, we can get comfortable with smudges in our experience. And I don't want us to do it. I want us to feel like it's a cuckoo burr. I want us to feel like it's a sand burr. And I don't know what I'm going to have to do to get it out, but I want it out. I want to get on track. I believe that's the hope, that's the blessing, and that's the benefit of the gospel age we live in. God can help us overcome. We don't have to set a precedence that'll cause the next generation to have a train wreck. We don't have to set a precedence that the next one coming behind us takes and causes it to explode into somebody. What's 700 divided by 8? Anybody know that? Well, it's a bunch. Almost 88 times. Do you want, let's be factual here. Do we want the little problem that we have and we kind of bump over it, do we want that little problem in our life to be 88 times worse in the next generation? I don't. I don't want to see my children or grandchildren go completely off the charts, because that's what Solomon did. I don't want to see them go completely off the charts because I became aware of something in my own life and I refused to do business with it. I just don't want that. By the grace of God, I won't. Y'all pray for me. When I become aware, I want to fix it. I don't like broken tools, and I don't like experiences for myself. I don't like experiences that's not healthy, that's not profitable. And my challenge, Lord, if there's something that I need to change, I don't want it to be 88 times worse in the ones that come behind me. Can you imagine what that is? Today, if David could look and say, Solomon, why did you do that? I don't know. Was David aware? There's things I'm not aware of. And there's things you're not aware of. But when we are aware, Lord, help us to put something in place. When I see myself in the glass, when I see myself in the mirror, Lord, help me to not go away and forget what I saw. You pray for me. I want to be faithful. I want us to be successful, all of us. I don't want any of us to go home feeling beat up. I want us to go home feeling encouraged. I can rise above this. I can be victorious. I can make the sacrifices. I can make the adjustments. I will, by the grace of God, be victorious. You pray for me.